It's Sam Cedar launching an illegal invasion and occupation of your brain.
This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Audible.com. You can get a free audiobook of your choice. Go to audiblepodcast.com/majority report. That's audiblepodcast.com/majority report for a free audiobook.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Monday, August 13th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. I am back from my vacation, ladies and gentlemen. How to ease in? Well, of course, let's talk about Paul Ryan. And on the show to discuss the pick from the perspective of the slightly different than mine, I believe, I'm hoping, Malcolm Out Loud, a national news and political commentator. And, of course, more on Paul Ryan. For me, I have to say this week, the biggest news story was, of course, when Justin Bieber sent a congratulatory video to one of the U.S. Olympic gold-winning swimmers.
Missy Franklin.
Missy Franklin, that's correct. I spent the entire week, essentially, watching the Olympics, recording it on DVD so that Mila could play it over and over and over and over again, and was completely out of the news. I mean, just, I would dip in. I had a very strict regimen. I would answer, like, 4 emails a day. I would look at my emails only from a specific period of time. Never got to the movies. Even Matthew, the film guy, he texted me, said, don't forget to watch the movie. Of course, I couldn't because it was all Olympics all the time. When I wasn't, you know, doing all sorts of honeydew stuff. And now I got honeydew stuff and daddy-dew stuff, basically. That's my life. And so Paul Ryan was Saturday morning. I got frantic emails. I didn't see it, of course, until about 10 o'clock. But to come on some shows to talk about Paul Ryan, I was out of pocket, as they say. And I was contemplating, I mean, it's a bizarre pick. We'll talk more about it later in the program. But from my perspective, perhaps a great pick to lock in certain positions for the lame duck. And we'll talk more about that as the program goes on. But from time to time, in one of the 18 email addresses that I use, I get pitched guests. And the first guest I got pitched to talk about, the Paul Ryan pick, was someone I wasn't familiar with. But I said, let's do this. So we're going to be talking to Malcolm Out Loud. He's a national news and political commentator. I am very curious as to what 50% of the American public has no idea who Paul Ryan is. And even those people who I think who do know who Paul Ryan is don't really know what this guy is pursuing. In fact, there was polling done by Democratic pollsters about 3 or 4 or 5 months ago, I think it was, where they were trying to test out a message of tying Romney to the Paul Ryan plan, which decimates Medicare, ends it, privatizes it, however you want to say. And the people in the focus test groups, they couldn't really register. They did not believe this was a politician's platform or plan. So much so that the Democratic pollsters didn't know how to tie Romney to this plan that nobody believed could actually be a plan. It's that ridiculous. We'll get into the details of it as the show progresses. But we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Malcolm Out Loud from MalcolmOutLoud.tv. We'll be right back after this. Hi, folks. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. It's the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. You can get a free Audible downloadable book right now at audiblepodcast.com/majority report. Why not get that Neil Barofsky book, Bailout, an inside account of how Washington abandoned Main Street while rescuing Wall Street, and get it for free at audiblepodcast.com/majority report. Support the show. Support your habit of wanting to be informed and entertained. Get your free book at audiblepodcast.com/majority report now. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program Malcolm Out Loud from MalcolmOutLoud.tv and author of the Out Loud Minute, which plays on 700 stations across the country on a daily basis. Welcome to the program, Malcolm.
Good to be with you, Bob.
So I'm very curious. I want to start off with this Paul Ryan pick. I want to ask you, let's start here. Paul Ryan is very closely associated, of course, with the Ryan plan, which proposes a tremendous amount, from my perspective, of cuts, and I think by anybody's perspective, of cuts, particularly to social programs. How do you think this is going to factor into the campaign over the next couple of months?
Well, it certainly is going to play into the extreme factor of Obama's campaign of class warfare, that's for sure. Of extremes, the haves and have-nots. Listen, that budget, I mean, that's, you know, the Democrats are going to obviously want to talk about that for lots of reasons. But, you know, it's not realistic. There needs to be a middle ground, and both of these parties need to understand that. There has to be a middle ground. The Ryan plan is not the plan that, you know, was enacted. It wasn't approved. We know that. And, you know, but it's substance in that plan. There has to be this balance of, you know, cutbacks being serious in this country. That's what Americans are looking for, is the difficult decisions our politicians need to make. And until that happens, I think we're going to continue to have nothing but challenges in this country. But, you know, Ryan's got some good ideas. It's just not going to be as extreme as maybe he thought it might be back when he enacted that plan or put that plan forth, you know?
Well, now give me a sense of, like, when you say get serious, what does that mean? I mean, what ideas of Paul Ryan's are good ideas?
Well, you have to remember there's we're in this sort of extreme. When I say an extremist mode, the position we have our country in right now economically is devastating. When you look at the deficit and the position of our country long term, it's devastating. This causes, this calls for extreme measures. That, I think, is what fuels things like when you say the Ryan plan and when you see plans like this coming forth. Do I think that plan was extreme? Probably. You know, I'm saying there needs to be a balance. We need to have cutbacks.
Where would you cut? Where do you think we need cuts?
I think we need to go in and cut, I think, across the board, everything, all entitlement programs, everything, everything.
So you would cut Social Security,
everything.
Medicare?
Everything. Everything needs to be looked at. Everything with a capital E. We're bankrupt. We have no money.
Well, wait a second.
Just like you would do if you're a business, you have to go and look at your plan.
What do you mean by we're bankrupt? I mean, we have a marginal tax rates at the lowest levels they've been in 70 years. I mean, so
our debt to GDP ratio in September, for the first time since World War II, is in excess of 70%. We have a debt that is close to $17 trillion. We have, combined with Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, in excess of $200 trillion in debt. I would
wait
say that's bankrupt, my friend. The only thing we haven't done is filed the paperwork at the courthouse.
Malcolm, $200 trillion of debt in Medicare and Social Security? I don't understand that number.
When you combine Medicare, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, the debts, when you combine all of this with our $17 trillion in debt, the numbers are in excess of $200 trillion, according to the CBO.
Well, but that doesn't include – you're not calculating the revenue that comes from those programs.
Well, I mean
sure. People pay into taxes – people pay into taxes into Social Security. People pay in taxes to Medicare. You're just looking at the side of the ledger that says how much we've got to pay out, but you're not looking at the side of the ledger that says how much comes in.
We're in a very, very dangerous region, I believe. And I believe this program that we think that Democrats think we can just turn the other way and not pay attention, I think is reckless at best. I don't really understand where this mentality comes from. We've never had this attitude in this country that it doesn't really matter. We'll leave the next generation worse off than we were. We've never had that attitude in this country. We took care of the next generation.
So
this
whose
is the
tax
first generation.
Rates, whose tax rates would you go back to? I mean, I presume you're talking about there would be increases in taxes, right? I mean, if we're talking about having to close this deficit and debt, which, you know, the CBO projects that if we were to just go back to the Clinton tax rates, we would close the deficit within 70 years.
Well, there are going to be some very difficult decisions for the next administration, whoever it's going to be. I assure you of that. Whether it is Obama and Biden or Romney and Ryan, they're going to have to make the very difficult decisions if this country is going to be serious in moving forward with a vitality that we want, that we're encouraged to have, that business people want to enjoy. I think you take a look at. The programs and the entitlement programs and the expansion of government over these past 4 years, and it's
well,
been
wait
expensive.
A second. Wait
a second. Do you disagree with that?
The expansion of government, I mean, it's true that there are far more people on food stamps now. That's because we've just gone through the greatest recession we've had since the Great Depression. I mean, so we have more poor people in this country. It's not that the programs have been expanded. It's that more people have become eligible for these programs because they're hurting. So would you cut children from Medicare? Get into some of these specifics, because we have a guy who has proposed the privatization of Social Security, the destruction of Medicare. If you want to add the qualifier as we know it, that's fine, I guess. I mean, but he's talking about privatizing it, leaving elderly people a substandard voucher to go and try and buy insurance on the private markets. There's barely any insurance available for people at that age, for good reason. So I'm just curious, when we talk about these in these general terms about hard decisions and whatnot, I'm just curious as to what the specifics are.
Well, the same specifics that I believe got us in this position in the first place. I think we've created the society. We've created the, you know, there are two points to this that we continue to have rhetoric, and Republicans, Democrats love to talk about, you know, what we're entitled to and what we're not entitled to. You're going to cut the children off. You're going to cut the, you know, the elderly off. This is sort of the scare tactics of how we come down the road here.
Well,
and
but
we
I mean,
build
that's what it is.
Huge empire.
I mean, when we cut Medicare, that's what we're doing, right? I mean,
well, listen, you know, we can't afford, if you can tell me how we can afford the current state, if you can tell me how we can afford the current programs, then I'd say terrific.
Go back to Clinton administration
and expand them.
Go back to Clinton administration or even Reagan administration tax rates. I would raise the capital gains tax rates as well. And I would remove the cap from Social Security. You remove the cap from Social Security, that program is completely solvent until
both
our grandkids are collecting insurance.
This program did not happen overnight. This program has been, and this program isn't, and let me say this to you, where we're at right now, when I say this program, where we sit right now in America, is not just a short-term problem, and it didn't happen just in the last 4 years, by the way. It's happened with both political parties, and it's happened over decades. And
right.
When you come back to you talk about the previous administrations, you're correct. Because, again, I think we've passed this thing down the road all too long. And I think our political system is in really need of a revamp. I mean, until Americans hold them accountable and really look at who we have in office, and are they making the tough decisions and doing the things we want them to do? We're not seeing that right now.
What constitutes a tough decision? I mean, is the tough decision you're talking about raising taxes on the wealthy or across the board?
Here's my answer.
Or is it cutting programs that literally keep elderly people out of poverty? And
here's the tough decision. Let me give it to you now. The tough decision is to balance the budget.
No, I understand. But, I mean, you don't think that the government functions like a family.
Well, listen, everybody on the planet has to balance a budget except the United States federal government.
Well, actually, no. In fact, most federal governments don't balance their budget. I mean, there's a very good argument to be made that if you were to actually get down to zero debt, it would crash the currency. But we don't have time to get into the specifics on that. But what is the problem with the deficit right now? What is it that is? I understand that it sounds very problematic, but I'm curious from your perspective, what is the problem with it?
You know, just on the surface, if you take a look at the confidence that it erodes in the American public, and just take a look at the surface for a moment of this and the sound bites of our indebtedness, that alone is dangerous and hazardous.
Well, no, I agree.
Country.
That's why I'm questioning what's behind the sound bites. I mean, because you're talking about. Isn't the fear that that if we have too large of a debt, and obviously the deficit growing the debt, that nobody's going to loan us money? I mean, isn't that the fear that people are not going to see the country as an investment? And if that was
Well, listen, I think, you know, in spite of these things, America is still the best investment in the world.
Right.
But
so what's the problem?
But we can't continue to say that and take advantage of that. See, if you're coming from the class,
I actually think that we should be borrowing more money now. We have interest rates that are in negative territory. We actually make money when we borrow money at this point, if you include inflation in that. We have the lowest treasury bond interest rates that we've had I don't know how many decades. And we're in a position now to
see the insolvency of our mindset and you know, just, you know, everything. I mean, take a look at the credit bureaus that you're going to see. I mean, we're being threatened now. It's not just S&P. I mean, we're being, you know, between now and the end of the year and between the next, between the general election, there's going to be some difficult decisions and some hell to pay. And I think you're going to find some of these credit bureaus are also going to begin to pull down that credit rating, which has never happened in this country before.
Well, we've had a credit. Hasn't our credit rating dropped already? I mean, and
S&P
that didn't affect.
Has, but now you're looking at all the others that are also that are monitoring, and we have a negative.
Did that credit rating? Hold on, Malcolm. Did that credit rating affect our capacity to borrow?
Well, it's going to, my friend. You can't keep taking it on and taking it on. You can get by for so long, but then, you know, you're not going to be able to pull it over at the end of the day when you say, it's how far you move the needle on the meter. I mean, how far you, sure, the S&P negative rating, maybe that wasn't as dramatic as maybe you thought it might have, should have been, or someone else, but you know what? You start adding up the other factors that are going to play into this thing ahead, and I think you're going to find that we're going to have some serious problems if we don't make the difficult choices.
But are those difficult choices? I mean,
we need to look at all entitlement programs, and we need, I mean, across the board.
Okay, look at them and do what?
They need to be put in check to understand what can America afford. That's the question at the end of the day.
Right. So, I mean, we can afford a lot more if we raise more revenue by taxing people more.
Well, we'll have to save that for another day. I have another interview here.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it. It's MalcolmOutLoud.tv and author of the Out Loud Minute on 700 stations across the country. We're going to take a brief break, and we will open up our phone lines now at 646-257-3920. We'll be right back after this. Back, Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. All right, folks, I figured I'd give it a try. I wanted to get the blood roll. I wanted my blood to get flowing after coming back from vacation, and I was hoping that Malcolm would have a little bit more specifics on what we're doing. But I also wanted to present what I thought was going to be. One of the most problematic narratives that we're getting in the country today, this sort of notion of panic and this idea that we have to make the tough choices. And I also wanted to illustrate a certain point. And I don't think Malcolm is necessarily one of these people, but he's certainly mimicking this point. This notion of we've got to make the tough choices is the premise by which the elite in this country and the Washington establishment, talking point, which is going to justify their upward redistribution of money, basically from the middle class upward to the wealthy in this country. And the question with Ryan now on the ticket, and the Democrats have been hoping obviously for a long time to tie Romney to the Ryan plan. The question is going to be, can we as liberals and progressives and people who are somewhat disappointed in President Obama's, at the very least, his rhetoric over the years, you know, it's not so out of bounds for Malcolm to say, you know, we got to tighten our belt like a family because the president said that. And it's a joke. It's ridiculous. And the question is, can we now get President Obama in a situation where he has to vow to protect Medicare, to protect Social Security? And by protect, I don't mean look at or whatever the sort of non-specific term that one could, not cut it. No cuts. No cuts by chaining it to the CPI. No cuts by raising the eligibility age. Same with Medicare. That is going to be the central argument that takes place in this campaign. The question is, where will President Obama be on this? And has the Obama, will the Obama campaign be different than the early Obama administration in seeing Paul Ryan not as a way in which to open the window of discussion to make them seem more moderate where they don't trash Medicare? Because, of course, Paul Ryan wanted to trash Medicare. Will the Obama campaign have to move to the left to create an even starker distinction? The implications of Paul Ryan being on this ticket are huge, and they could provide us with a lot of benefit going forward. Just what that benefit will be remains to be seen. And I'm not talking from electoral stance for President Obama. I thought Obama was going to win this election 4 months ago. I thought he was going to win this election 6 months ago. I thought he was going to win this election 2 months ago. And I think he will win this election in 2 months from now, and then in 4 months from now, or whenever the election is. I can't remember. Sometime in November. Whatever. I've lost track of time. 202 area code. Who's this?
Hello. Sam?
Yeah, who's this?
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. This is Ted.
Hey, Ted. How you doing?
Hi. I usually just listen to you on your podcast, but I was home today, and I wanted to just make two remarks. First, in reference to the octopus, which I bought on your recommendation, and it was really great. And you know, if you look at that, and you look at the books by Michael Lewis and Matt Taibbi, the one thing that you said that is it, that there is a mentality to the people in these hedge funds that they look at their clients the same way that I guess you would call a con man looks at their marks. You know, they view these people as, you know, their clients are stupid, and I think that, you know, people have to recognize that we are not considered by them intelligent enough to understand what they're attempting to do.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? I would say that that mentality is not just amongst the hedge fund managers or the Wall Streeters. I think that mentality, frankly, has permeated a lot of our Beltway establishment. And I think, you know, you see it when Alan Simpson says, you know, you people, you teat suckers, who are sucking off the teat of this country, you don't understand what's going on with Social Security. You don't understand. I mean, right. there is a, and then of course, it's not. They assume this sort of this attitude towards the riffraff, and then also simultaneously perceive it as a license and a justification as to why they should have more. Why they should have more than us.
I want to make one other point, and that was about this whole thing about, you know, the economy and the country going broke and fiscal responsibility and all this stuff. And you know, if you look at what the Fed has done over the past 3 or 4 years, where they've basically given loans, you know, the low-cost loans, and in some cases, outright grants.
Right.
To the richest people in the, not just in this country, but the richest people in the world. I mean, you know, in total, it's somewhere around $16 trillion that they've given out. And what's really interesting is that NPR a couple of years ago did a report on this. It was actually with This American Life in conjunction with NPR's finance reporters, and it was called The Invention of Money. It's on the This American Lifestyle website. And what they did was they actually were allowed by the Fed to go in and actually watch them go through the process of giving out. You remember when they gave out, I think it was like $2.5 trillion that they gave out at one time, and they were, you know, given, they opened the Fed window to all kinds of different companies. Usually the Fed window was only open to
That's
banks.
Right. They opened up the discount window to all sorts of outfits that claim they were in some way financial entities.
Right. And the main point about that was that, they went through the whole process, and it was like listening to the Twilight Zone because of the amount of money that they were talking about and the cavalier attitude that they had in terms of what they were doing, and you know, it was amazing. But along with that, at the end of the report, they were asking the person at the Fed about, you know, what the cost to the country was with all this money they were loaning out. And they said, well, the Fed actually made money on what they gave out. And you know, I don't know if it's true or not, because I don't have enough understanding of how that works to see how they were able to do that. But what it does is it contrasts with how they talk about, you know, giving money or loaning money to average people. You know, if they
right.
talk about, if anybody brings the idea of, you know, having a bailout for, you know, homeowners or anything, just like this guy that, you know, is in the, what was he, he's a, you know, the federal guy that turned down the president's idea of giving low-cost loans to people
DeMarco,
on the water.
Yeah.
And he said, because of, you know, a moral, you know, this quote, moral hazard. They always use this quote, moral hazard, when they talk about it. You know, it's such a contrast between how they treat the average people in this country and how they treat, the 1%ers around the world. And that's all I have to say. But I just wanted to, I haven't had a chance to do this, but I really want to thank you for the people you bring on your show. And, I pay for the podcast, and I'll keep doing that.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. I'll give you one of those. All right, thanks for calling in. And it's true, this notion of, if you give money to the little people, it's a moral hazard. If you give it to the banks, you're saving the country. And this appears to be the basically the MO, and the way they set the table now for this stuff is, of course, to say that we're broke. We're broke. We need to make the hard decisions. Can't really go into what those hard decisions are, because essentially what they are, we need to make the difficult decision to screw the vast majority of Americans for the benefit of the rich. Paul Ryan, in his plan, called for the ending of Medicare, except for you continue to call it Medicare. And that's why, if you say that Paul Ryan called for the ending of Medicare, somebody issues you 7 Pinocchios or something. And I'll remind you that Pinocchio did not lie more than an average person or puppet. It's just that his nose grew. So there is no logic behind multiple Pinocchios. The logic should be on the length of his nose. But aside from that little detail, what is Medicare? It is social insurance provided and administered by the government to increase their buying power. There was an experiment called Medicare Advantage, wherein people could opt out of Medicare and put that money, have the government basically pay private insurers. What they have found over time is that the government ended up paying about 20% more for that health insurance when it was paid directly to the private insurers and not through the bulk negotiating rights abilities of Medicare. Part of the Affordable Care Act diverted about $150 billion from that program into other programs of Medicare and into the expansion of Medicaid. And it resulted in no reported loss of benefits from enrollees. So what Paul Ryan wants to do is essentially say, okay, this is defined contribution plan, no longer defined benefit plan. Medicare, as you know, provides you with a minimum basic amount of health insurance relative to how much health care costs you have when you get older. In the Ryan plan, you continue to pay into Medicare. And what they do is they kick you out a voucher, coupon essentially, that says take this coupon to a private insurer, go onto the private insurance market, and buy insurance for you, a 65-year-old person. We will not raise the amount of that coupon, regardless of how much health insurance or health care costs rise. And at the beginning, you still will be underwater. It would essentially destroy Medicaid, replace it with a lump sum for states to use as they saw fit. And for all the uninsured, because, of course, Ryan wants to, and I guess like Romney, on day one, repeal the Affordable Care Act, they would give money to the uninsured, essentially another coupon, $2,500, to buy your own plan. Is there a single insurance plan that you can buy in the country for $2,500 a year? I don't know. Much harder, I would assume, too, if you're a kid. I guess your parents would do it. The addition of Ryan on this ticket by Mitt Romney, to me, basically comes down to, I mean, there's a couple of theories that I've read about this. And it's already becoming clear that the timeline that they told, they've been telling the press, was a lie based upon their inability to get signs up, I guess, for a recent campaign rally. Because they supposedly made this pick a couple of weeks ago. There's some who speculate that Romney knew he was going to lose. And I think this was it Noam Schreiber in the... Noam Schreiber in New Republic. His speculation is that Team Romney knew they were going to lose. And they wanted to do it in such a way that would reduce the amount of blame that they would take. And so instead of turning to some milquetoast Pawlenty or Portman or Mitch Daniels, who might be able to help them electorally, arguably, although that's sort of a questionable assumption at any time. They did this because they wanted the conservative wing of the party, which they knew would celebrate the pick of Paul Ryan, because Paul Ryan is an arch social conservative and is draconian. Forget about deficit reduction. There's no deficit reduction in his plan. He vows to reduce the deficit. That's the deficit reduction. But the numbers that he has doesn't do that. The numbers that he has simply cuts taxes for the rich, cuts Medicare, cuts Social Security, cuts transportation infrastructure payments, cuts food safety payments, cuts everything the government does, of course, except defense, which it increases. No one who has looked at the specifics of the plan says there's any deficit reduction here whatsoever. This is simply how would Ayn Rand want to reshape the government prior to her collecting Social Security. And so Romney knew that this pick would go over well with conservatives. It would finally provide him with some specifics. They have already given up their strategy of attempting to make this a referendum on Obama. because Romney is such a horrible candidate and the economy was not as bad as he was hoping it would be. And so by picking Paul Ryan, come November 6th or whenever the election is over, Romney can say it wasn't my fault. We went with the full conservative plan. It's just conservative wing of the party couldn't hack it. For me personally, I think the Romney campaign knew that they were going to lose. I think he knew he was going to lose back when he was still in the primary. When he was fighting Santorum, and his stump speech was, I promise you that I will be the nominee. Not, I promise you I will be the next president of the United States. It's just, I'm going to get through this process, which my daddy could never get through. I added that last part. And I think there was something so toxic for Romney in his taxes. I don't know if it was something illicit, something that would have gotten him in trouble in terms of his tithing with the Mormon church. I don't know if it would have been just once his taxes came out, it would have been clear he was just so greedy over the past 10 years that even though he knew he was running for president, that he was irresponsible, and he would have taken the full blame for this. And now, this impending electoral disaster for him, he'll be able to disperse some of the blame, which is exactly what, frankly, one learns in corporate America more than anything else, is how can we fail and not get blamed for it? And you see that take all sorts of forms in corporate America. I lack vision to run this company in a certain way. I know what I'll do. I'll cut workers. I'll have a short-term gain in our profits. I win because my compensation is tied towards stock options, which are a function of increasing profits. The board of directors will be fine because they also get their compensation in a similar way. And by the time this thing's in the crapper, we'll be long gone. And that is exactly what Mitt Romney's strategy is. By the time anybody's talking about me, Mitt Romney, again, it'll be all in the context of history books, and no one's going to remember. So kudos to Mitt Romney for figuring that out. Jeremiah, welcome to the program.
Hi, Sam. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. How are you?
I'm fine. I hope you had a great vacation.
I did.
Good. Sammy, I was going through my iPad the other day, and I ran across an article, and it's from September 10th, 2011, and it's from Business Day Technology, New York Times. And this is talking about entitlements. Get this. Rich tax breaks bolster makers of video games. The article is excellent. It tells what's actually going. $123 billion going for tax incentives of the video game makers and other bullshit. But Eddie, this is what I can't understand. Listen to this. Can I just read real quick, and I'll get right to the point? It actually says where the oil companies are questioning now. The big oil companies are questioning now why the video game makers are getting these great tax incentives when it's a quote-unquote industry whose main contribution is to create amusing and sometimes antisocial entertainment. What a riot. Unbelievable.
Well,
give me a break.
Well, Jeremo, I'm not sure why they're getting tax breaks either. I'd have to look into it, but certainly saw what happened with Kurt Schiller in Rhode Island. I got to jump, though, buddy.
Just real quick, Steven, the only thing that's killing me, that guy that you were talking to before, they always go the entire Medicare, Medicaid, let's go. But they don't talk about other tax incentives with other corporations.
Of course not.
Give me a break.
And with all due respect, listen, with all due respect to my guest, he didn't seem to have any specifics. I mean, I asked the question 15 times. I mean, this is just a talking point that's out there that makes people seem like they're not partisan. I mean, that's the game plan, right? I mean, does anybody from No Labels, Third Way, whatever you want to call these things, Americans Elect, they all say the same thing. We got to make the hard choices. I'm not left. I'm not right. I'm not an extremist. I'm not a partisan.
Right.
We just got to make the hard choices.
That's
you know what the hard choice is? It's saying to the millionaires who support your elections, you guys got to pay more. But that's not a choice that we see our politicians make. Appreciate the call, buddy.
Thanks, Sammy. Take care.
Bye. All right, folks. We go...
really quick, I just looked up really quick. The reason why video game makers get such tax benefits is because they straddle the lines between software development, entertainment industry, and online retailing. So they combine all the different tax incentives of those different industries, and they get them.
Clever. All it takes is video games, and Matt is right on the ball. All right, folks, we're going to take a break, head into the better half of the program. Before we do... over the weekend, lost a good friend of the show. I haven't had him on in this incarnation of the Majority Report, and to my great lament, David Rakoff passed away, 47 years old, great writer, was a not a frequent guest. We had him on a couple of times on the old show. Just one of the nicest. I know a lot of funny people. And a lot of people who are funny professionally, I don't know if I know any of them that were is just genuinely as nice as Rakoff. And also very poignant at times. And over the course of the week, maybe at one point, I don't know, we'll figure it out. We're going to play a couple of those interviews. He passed on, had cancer about 20 years ago, and defeated it, but came back a year or two ago. And so if you get a chance, Google David Rakoff, familiarize yourself with him. Was just a really just a wonderful voice and a very sweet guy. So he will be missed. When we head into the better half of the program, more on Ryan. And also a study that's come out suggesting the efficacy of making sugary crap less available to kids in schools in terms of fighting obesity. We will talk about that and more in the better half of the program. Number 646-257-3920, Majority FM is the IM. And, folks, it is your membership which keeps this show alive. Tomorrow we'll be talking to Bob Kincaid about mountaintop mining. On Wednesday we'll be talking to Chris Hedges. And, you know, you guys are our primary source of revenue for this show. I mean, beyond primary. And so if you like what we do, if you missed the program last week as a non-member, and hopefully maybe it made you consider how relevant it is to your awareness of what's going on and your entertainment and whatnot, think about becoming a member today at majority.fm. Other ways of supporting the show, justcoffee.coop, fair trade, organic coffee, tea, and chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. And, of course, buy your Amazon crap through our Amazon link. Give us reviews at iTunes, donate your account.com. But it is becoming a member, which keeps this show alive. All right, we'll see you in the better half.